thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guests this morning are Heather Dune McAdam and Simon Worrell, authors of Starcrossed, a true Romeo and Juliet story in Hitler's Paris. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Last week we began the Jewish month of Elul, final month of the Hebrew calendar year, when we prepare ourselves for the coming Jewish Days of Awe, the High Holy Days. A little less than 3 weeks from now, Rosh Hashanah begins Friday night, September 15th. The word Elul, the name of this month, is made up of four Hebrew letters, Aleph, Lamed, Vav, Lamed. In a beautiful interpretation, these stand for the words, Ani ledodi vedodi li, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine, a passage from the biblical book, the Song of Songs. This teaches us that at this time of year, God seeks to unify with us, to renew the bonds of love and tenderness that underlie our relationship with the divine, and which are especially available to us during this period of return and renewal. To remind us that tshuva, repentance or return, is more than a two-day-a-year process, we Jews sound the shofar each day of the month of Elul, awakening us to the need to reform and return to the best that we can be, and to apologize to those we've wronged or injured. Blowing shofar is a great way to wake everybody up. A shofar, of course, is a ram's horn hollowed out. You can actually make a real horn shofar of your own. With a bit of practice, you too can blow the shofar. The school children in our congregation Beit Simcha Religious School all learn how to blow the shofar. You can too. In any case, it's hearing the sound of the shofar that's the mitzvah, the commandment, and it's a great way to experience the urgency of the coming High Holy Days. An ancient, haunting sound, the shofar, nonetheless, oddly beautiful and dramatic. And so, of course, I brought a shofar along this morning to blow us into the Too Jewish Radio Show today, following our annual tradition. Well, if you weren't awake yet this morning, surely you should be by now. This year, as we prepare for this season of introspection and self-improvement, this time of tshuva, I continue to urge everybody to help the victims of the recent Maui firestorm by donating to the Hawaii Community Foundation's Maui Strong Fund. As you know, I and my wife and daughter were there when the fire took place quite close. We are told throughout the High Holy Days, Uteshuva, Tefila, Tzedakah, Ma'avirin, Edroa, Hagzera. Repentance, prayer, and charity set aside the severe decree. That is, our own actions can change our world and this entire world. It is a note of personal, responsible empowerment during a season of self-examination. Make a difference in this coming year of 5784 in our world, and do so beginning now, in this month of Elul, as we prepare for Rosh Hashanah, the Yom Hadin, the Day of Judging. To play us in this morning as a preview for the coming High Holy Days, here's a medley of our Reshet Sfateinu melodies from the Rosh Hashanah Shofar service, coming up in about 3 weeks. That was cantors Barry Braun and Ezra Scher singing Ereshet Sfateinu in a medley of different melodies for the coming holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Fewer than 3 weeks away now, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha for the High Holy Days. Go to our website, beitsimchatucson.org, for all service information. We welcome guests for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Our guests on Too Jewish This Morning, Heather Dune McAdam and Simon Worrell, are the authors of Star-Crossed, a true Romeo and Juliet story in Hitler's Paris. It reads like a dramatic novel, but is nonfiction. Find out how they found this untold story when they join us in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
This Is Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? In three fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, This Is Judaism brings you the joy of Jewish life and learning. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about. Plus, you can get a sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are at the Tucson JCC, the J, and are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, This Is Judaism is completely free, but the learning is invaluable. Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Want your kids to understand Jewish heritage, history, and holidays? Want to try some delicious Jewish food? Then This Is Judaism is for you. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5675. Visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. This Is Judaism is taught on three consecutive Sunday afternoons in September and October at the Tucson JCC. There's a free Zoom option, but registration is required. All classes are with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Remember, there's no obligation, and registration is completely free for this wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Register for This Is Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. It's the most effective introduction to Jewish learning and life ever. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675.
We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish, and then to Too Jewish, the authors of a new book, Star-Crossed, A True Romeo and Juliet Story, Heather Dune MacAdam and Simon Worrell. It's a terrific book. Heather's the author and was previously on Too Jewish discussing the Pen Award finalist 999, The Extraordinary Young Women of the First Official Transport to Auschwitz, and other books, and has worked extensively. And her partner, Simon, is the author of two acclaimed books of his own, The Story of His Mother, The Very White of Love, and The Poet and the Murderer. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Hi, good to be here.
Thanks, Rabbi. Wonderful to be here again.
So, Star-Crossed, it could be a novel, right? But it's not. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, the archive comes out of letters of the survivor, or I'm sorry, the Holocaust victim. And her letters are incredibly dramatic. So we used as the framework for the book. We also interviewed her sister, and the story just lends itself to that sort of dramatic element that you might expect in a novel, but it's all true.
I mean, it's an extraordinary story of, you know, both Jewish and Catholic relations at the time of the Holocaust. It's highly dramatic. It starts out, you know, as a love story between a Jewish woman and a Catholic poet. Tell us a little bit about how that evolved.
Yeah, they met in Paris. They were both young and handsome and intelligent and gifted. She was a student at the Beaux-Arts Academy. She was a wonderful artist. We have a lot of artwork in the book. He was a young poet called Jean Jaussion. He had founded a sort of Dadaist group called Les Réverbères, which means the street lamps. And they fell madly in love, and like Romeo and Juliet, the book's named after, a true story in Hitler's Paris, both sets of parents were against. Hers less so. They just thought she was too young to think of getting serious and getting married. His ardently so. They were absolute French anti-Semites, Catholic anti-Semites, and they hated the idea that their darling only son would possibly marry a Jewess.
That was not an uncommon sentiment. I mean, we always kind of highlight the French resistance and so on, but France was fairly anti-Semitic itself, right?
It definitely was. Under the Vichy government, under Marshal Pétain, there were numerous, and the occupying Germans passed numerous anti-Semitic laws all through the period of our story. So she was sort of being hounded, as it were, out of public life and her family through 41, 42. And there was a grotesque exhibition called Le Juif en France, which had huge pictures, images of hook-nosed Jews supposedly conspiring to conquer the world.
We will talk much more with Heather Dune MacAdam and Simon Worrell about their new book, Star-Crossed, A True Story of Romeo and Juliet in Hitler's Paris, when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or attend on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675. The Jewish High Holy Days are coming up fast. Please join us for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur at Beit Simcha. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. to find out how to come. Or you can call 520-276-5675. It's time for religious school. Registration's open for school-age children or grandchildren. Join us for our fabulous Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Go there and sign up. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night and Saturday morning services, too. Friday nights at 6:30 p.m., Shabbat evening celebration services with an oneg to follow. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., preceded by Torah study at 9 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can come to services on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our musical services are in person and virtually, and all of our Adult Education Academy classes are offered live and on Zoom. Go to Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha, Tucson.org, or email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Religious school is available in blended format, too, students live and a few on Zoom. The High Holy Days are coming up fast. Join us for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah begins September 15th. And 16th, guests are welcome. Go to Beit Simcha Tucson to sign up. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, High Holy Days, religious school, Torah Tikes program, Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and our rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish congregation in southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com, TOOJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. And email me, 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There was a news story that you brought to our attention related to the Black Sea, and, well, tell us about it.
Right. So the Black Sea is an interesting region historically, culturally, linguistically, and otherwise, because we think of it as wedged between Turkey and the former Soviet Union. But the former Soviet Union, of course, has split into many different countries. And there's a few other important countries that border the Black Sea, like Bulgaria, Romania, and Georgia. So it's a very multi-ethnic, multilingual region. And at one point, the Black Sea was entirely Greek. It was the Pontic Greeks. And it was a Greek lake in the sense that the Mediterranean much later would be a Roman lake.
Yeah, it was all Greek settlements. Yeah. So they colonized the whole area.
All over. And I once ran into descendants of those Pontic Greeks from the Black Sea coast in the capital of Armenia, in Yerevan. They were eating lunch in a park and speaking Greek. So I said hello to them.
In Greek.
And of course.
Of course.
And, you know, tried to get their story, which eventually we switched into Russian. But it was quite interesting. But the point of this news story is that a pretty much intact ancient synagogue was found on the north shore of the Black Sea in an area which may be Ukraine today, may be Russia today, hard to say. But it was found by Russian archaeologists and certified, and, you know, stuff was collected and carefully preserved. And it is conclusive proof, according to the Russian archaeologists, that there were Jews in southern Russia. Whether it's Russia today or not is an open question, but there were Jews in that part of the former Soviet Union and that part of the former Tsarist Empire for at least 2,000 years.
So this is Second Temple period synagogue.
Right, right. So it's basically...
Which there aren't that many out there. I mean, there are some, but that's not super common.
Right. There aren't a lot of ruins of synagogues outside of Israel from that early in history.
Right.
This was very early in the Christian era, if not even before the Christian. It's somewhere like, between 40 BCE and 40 CE.
Yeah, like contemporaneous would say the synagogue in Capernaum or something, and you
right.
know, in Israel. But really remarkable. So this is the Black Sea region.
Yeah.
This is Second Temple times.
Yeah. And I suspect that, you know, the Jews had a lot of interactions with the Greek Empire. As it grew, they had more and more interactions. And there were Jews in Greece long before Jesus or any of his disciples were around. And probably a breakoff community from those Jews in Greece founded a synagogue in this obscure place on the steppes north of the Black Sea.
So, having been in the place that they believe is the oldest synagogue in history, out the Delos, which is a Greek island, actually, it's just off of Mykonos. It's not much of a synagogue, but it's identified by, you know, benches around the outside and a center podium. It seems like a Beit Knesset. That's the only other way to interpret it, I think. Only real way to interpret it. That's a fascinating maybe entree to talking about the Jews of the steppes, and maybe we can come back to that next week.
I look forward to it.
Thanks, Tom. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie new, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morty visits Dr. Saul, the veterinarian, and says to Dr. Saul, "My dog has a problem. He's a Jewish dog. His name is Seth, and he can talk." "He can talk?" the veterinarian queries. "Watch this." Morty points to his dog and commands, "Seth, fetch." And Seth the dog says, "Why are you talking to me like that? You always order me around like I'm nothing. You only call me when you want something, and you make me sleep on the floor with my arthritis. You give me this farcocta food without salt or fat, tell me it's a special diet. It tastes like dreck. You should eat it. And do you ever take me for a decent walk? No, it's out of the house. A short pish right back home. Maybe if I could stretch out a little, this sciatica wouldn't kill me so much. I should roll over and play dead for real, for all you care." The veterinarian's amazed. "This is remarkable. What's the problem?" And Morty says, "His hearing. I said fetch, not kvetch. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. How do we change our world? And how long should we expect it to take? This week's portion of Ki Tavo gives us powerful commandments about how we are supposed to live in society. We're commanded to be moral, to protect the rights of the impoverished, the widow, and the stranger. We are supposed to be honest in business, careful of the needs of the hungry and homeless. We are to create a society of ethical practice and moral concern. We are to understand that a nation is judged by how it treats its weakest, neediest members. We're told repeatedly in Ki Tavo that God knows and expects us to live up to this covenant, to uphold it, to cherish it, to make it our own. And we are told of the blessings that will be ours if we do this, and the curses we'll bring on ourselves if we cannot. This covenant was large and challenging. It put real responsibilities on its members, its B'nai B'rit, to do things that aren't easy or obvious, even if they are right. No doubt our ancient Israelite ancestors sometimes struggled when told, "Open your hands to the poor and the needy, welcome the stranger, love your neighbor as you love yourself." Probably they didn't always manage to give their full tithes, to make the pilgrimage to the temple, to declare gratitude for what they had. I'm sure there were times they didn't provide adequately for the widow or the orphan. But that challenge, the daily requirement to try to live up to this standard, nonetheless made them better people, made Jewish society egalitarian and, generally speaking, ethical. When they failed, they learned that what God wanted was tshuva, return to the right course. Positive societal change was not instantaneous, but evolutionary, but it did happen for our ancestors and was codified as a practical framework by the rabbis of the Talmud. These standards should have at least as much meaning for us today. Persecution directed at the weakest members of our society, immigrants, people seeking asylum, young children, LGBTQ individuals and couples, it's simply wrong. We have a responsibility as American Jews and as decent human beings to work to change this directly and publicly. When something isn't right, we need to speak up, to seek change. That's what the Torah teaches us in Ki Tavo. It's what God requires of us. During this month of Elul and in the coming 5784 year, may we all stand up to this challenge. When we return in a moment, our guests this morning, Heather Dune McAdam and Simon Wuerl, award-winning authors of Star-Crossed, A True Romeo and Juliet Story in Hitler's Paris, explain how they found this story and how much it affected them as they created this outstanding book. Find out when we return in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
An Israeli woman, Batsheva Nagari, was murdered and her driver injured in a shooting attack outside Hebron last week. It was just the latest in a string of deadly Palestinian terror attacks in the West Bank that included the killing of a father and son in Huwara a week ago. That murder, Shai Nigrecker, who was 60 years old, and his son Aviad Nir, well, they had traveled to the Palestinian town of Huwara from their home in Ashdod in order to do errands when they were shot to death at a gas station. That town, of course, was a site of riots by Jewish settlers back in February after two Jewish brothers were murdered there. The victim of the Hebron murder, Batsheva Nagari, was a resident of the West Bank settlement of Beit Haggai. She was riding in a car on Route 60, the highway that runs the length of the West Bank. Her young daughter was in the car, but unharmed. In both cases, Hamas and Palestinian Jihad praised the attacks but did not claim responsibility for them. These terror attacks come amid a surge in Palestinian terrorist violence in the West Bank and in Israel itself. That's included West Bank shooting attacks like the ones this week and attacks by Palestinians within Israel, as well as frequent Israeli military raids on Palestinian cities. Since the beginning of 2023, more than 24 Israelis and over 100 West Bank Palestinians have been killed in the violence. In other news, Paraguay will move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen announced last week during a trip to South America. He later added that Uruguay would also open a branch of its diplomatic mission in Jerusalem. Currently, only 4 of the almost 100 embassies to Israel are located in Jerusalem: Guatemala, Honduras, Kosovo, and, of course, the U.S. When Paraguay's embassy makes the move, 3 of the city's 5 embassies in Jerusalem will belong to the Latin American countries. All embassies should be in Jerusalem. It's been the capital of the State of Israel since its creation and the Jewish people's capital for over 3,000 years, said Lior Hayat, Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesperson. She is, of course, right. It's the capital. Jerusalem's status remains central to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Both sides claim it as their capital. Most countries have elected to leave embassies in Tel Aviv to avoid being perceived as endorsing the Israeli claim, even though Western Jerusalem, where the Israeli government buildings are all located, including the Knesset, has always been Jewish and a part of Israel and recognizes such by international law. It's ridiculous that people keep their embassies in Tel Aviv. Finally, in 2018, then-U.S. President Donald Trump moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. Argentinian presidential candidate Javier Milei, who recently won the primaries, said last week that if he wins the general election in late October, he too will move his country's embassy to Jerusalem. Lior Hayat, the Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesperson again, said that there is a long history of ties between Israel and Latin American countries. The friendship between Israel, Latin American countries, and the Jewish people existed even before the creation of the State of Israel, he said. Hayat noted that of the 33 UN members that voted in 1947 for Resolution 181, which recommended the partition of mandatory Palestine into the Jewish state and Arab state, 13 of the countries were in Latin America. Just one Latin American country, Cuba, opposed the resolution. 6 abstained. Hayat said diplomats from Uruguay, Guatemala, and Brazil advocated for the resolution that created Israel. Latin American countries, moreover, opened their doors to Jews escaping Europe during the Holocaust. Hayat added that the rise of evangelical movements in Latin America also helps political support for Israel. We see that in Guatemala, Honduras, and Central America in general, but lately also in South America. Jonathan Grossman, postdoctorate fellow at Jerusalem's Hebrew University, said that some Latin American conservative leaders, including the president of Paraguay, promised to move their embassy in order to court the evangelical vote. This was true in Honduras, where evangelicals are the largest denomination. That's interesting. Allison Federka of Geopolitical Futures, a Texas-based consulting firm, says that Latin American countries relocate their embassies also in order to strengthen ties with the U.S. The move to Jerusalem is a political statement that's as much about ties with the U.S. as it is about ties with Israel, she said. It's one of the stronger diplomatic gestures they can make to gain favor with Washington. Federica said that some Latin American countries are small. They need more tools in order to make big geopolitical statements. The embassy relocation is primarily diplomatic and political and relatively easy to execute. It allows these countries to make big statements at a relatively low cost. Hebrew University's Grossman said that the Biden administration's non-reversal of Trump's decision to relocate the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem gives confidence to Latin American leaders to move or retain their embassies in Jerusalem. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
This Is Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? In three fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, This Is Judaism brings you the joy of Jewish life and learning. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about. Plus, you can get a sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are at the Tucson JCC, the J, and are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, This Is Judaism is completely free, but the learning is invaluable. Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Want your kids to understand Jewish heritage, history, and holidays? Want to try some delicious Jewish food? Then This Is Judaism is for you. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5675. Visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. This Is Judaism is taught on three consecutive Sunday afternoons in September and October at the Tucson JCC. There's a free Zoom option, but registration is required. All classes are with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Remember, there's no obligation, and registration is completely free for this wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Register for This Is Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. It's the most effective introduction to Jewish learning and life ever. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish Heather Dune McAdam and Simon Worrell, authors of the new book Star-Crossed, A True Romeo and Juliet Story in Hitler's Paris. Both are accomplished authors and awarded authors. It's a nonfiction that uncovers the story. Was this story known before?
Well, it was. There was an article written in a Paris newspaper, and that covered the story, and we knew about that story, but really our inside scoop comes from one of my best friends, and this was her aunt, and her mother is still alive, and that was a younger sister of Annette Zelman, and Michelle is, gosh, is she 95 or 96 now? She lives in Paris. She's absolutely incredible, and we interviewed Michelle right during COVID, actually. But I've been, hanging out on the beach with Laurent for over 20 years, and she has said to me, "Hello, you need to write a book about my aunt." And I would say, "Oh, Laurent, you know, it's just family lore." And then one day, 1 year, she said, "Hello, my mother, she just inherited this big book of letters from my aunt."
Oh my God.
"And her art." And I went, that's a book.
Yeah. What did you feel like when you started looking through the box?
Oh, my God. I'm going to start crying. It's incredible. It's really incredible. And I'll let Simon talk about this because it was right after 999 had come out, and I was in America and he was in England. And I called him up and I said, Michelle has this archive. Fly to Paris and do a pre-interview and take a look at it. And let's see if this is a book. And since Simon is fluent in French as well in German, he was the perfect writing partner for this project.
So Simon,
what was it like to see the archive?
Yeah, what was it like to see those archives?
It was wonderful. I actually took the Eurostar train from London to Paris. I went to meet Michelle. She appeared at the door all dressed in white, a pants suit, and fit as a flea at 96 years now, 92 then I think it was. And yeah, we sat down in a beautiful apartment in Montmartre, and we sat at a big table surrounded by photographs on the wall of her family and Annette, her father, and all of her papers and archives spread on the table. These beautiful drawings by Annette, I remember those particularly, and then all of the letters, and it all started there. I filmed her and recorded her for 3 or 4 hours, and then we then came back together, and we spent 3 months with her in Paris.
It's a powerful story. You know, like all tragedies, it starts beautifully. That may not be the right way to put it, but it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does.
I mean, the thing I love about this story is the innocence. It's always what draws me to all the stories that I've written about in terms of the Holocaust. I always deal with young women. 1942, which nobody's really delved into in terms of women in Auschwitz. And they're just so young, and it's the beginning of the war, and they don't have a clue. And so you as a reader, but also as a researcher, you're on the edge of history going, no.
Don't, no, leave, go, don't let it happen, right.
And you just see these beautiful, vivacious young people full of hope, and, you know, Annette was an artist, so her hope was in her drawings and her paintings, and you just saw the whimsy and, you know, the joy that she had in her life, and she just couldn't believe what was going on. As young people do, you know, we are immortal when we're young, so it's very hard to accept the fact that anything else is going on.
No, I always feel that when I was 17, I knew everything, and since then I know less and less every year.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a certainty.
I think it says
to
a lot about the quality of the two young people and the passion that they have, that Simone de Beauvoir, who was, of course, a habitué of the Café de Flore, wrote about them after Annette and Jean disappeared, and wrote a very moving little paragraph or two about them called The Empty Seat. And she said that she, you know, their seat was empty, but their seat also, empty seat, represented all the many thousands of others who disappeared.
You know, I was thinking about this. I love history, and the part of history that I really enjoy is seeing the rise of something, or, you know, you're at that moment where there's fateful decisions to be made, but before that, there's hope and idealism, and then, of course, sometimes there's disaster and tragedy. Was their fate inevitable?
No.
I don't think so. Of course, the Jews were being vehemently persecuted. You could say that Annette made a mistake, because her parents left when things got hot and went to Limoges in central France in the free zone, which was much more comfortable and friendly towards Jews. Annette chose to stay behind. She sort of deceived her parents. She was going to sort out the apartment and she'd follow on, but of course she was staying there to move into John's studio. And from there, it was not long. They published their marriage bans. They decided love will conquer all, despite all prejudice. And they published their marriage bans, and she was denounced to the Gestapo.
I think the other thing about the inevitability is, you know, there it is, you know, like do you go down this road to the left, or do you go straight? And that makes all the difference, right?
Right.
And the idea to publish the marriage bans, I think, was logically it was a good idea. Let's change Annette's name to
something Catholic, you know, right?
Yeah, to a French. Gentile name, and that will protect her. But in fact, that's what
got
made her
caught.
Target,
right?
And so, you know, you just don't know when you're in these sorts of circumstances. She became a political prisoner, and it, you know, that's really hard to believe. But the moment the marriage bans was published, they passed a law because of that marriage ban that it was illegal for a Jew to marry a Gentile, and that made her a political prisoner.
It's really incredible, like that their particular relationship is what led to that particular anti-Semitic law.
Yeah.
I mean, there's betrayal in this novel, and not novel. I keep thinking of it as a novel. I'm sorry. I know it's nonfiction. There's betrayal. Why do people do these things?
Well, we don't want to give a spoiler alert because we don't want
to... Yeah, sorry. Sorry, I don't want to ruin the book for people.
That's all right. No, we don't want to give away who betrayed her. But
right.
Yes, there definitely was a major betrayal that the family only found out about in 1964 when somebody had been, a friend of theirs had been to a bookshop and saw this new book by a French historian about the Holocaust in France, which mentioned Annette's story and gave the name of the denouncer.
The Holocaust in France, I think, although there have been some really fine works, most of them, the ones that come to mind are like Marge Piercy, they're fiction. Is there a reason that people sort of dance around how brutal it was for Jews there?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, Serge Klarsfeld's done an enormous amount of research around the French Jews, and there's been some really great books, like Anne Seba did Ploisien, which is about the women of Paris and, you know, those who collaborated and those who worked in the resistance. So there's a rich history, but also because of Paris, it sort of inspires us to wax eloquent and think novelistically, I think,
right.
Because it is Paris. I mean, we had a great time, you know, doing research. Unfortunately, it was during COVID, but, you know, we took the car out at about midnight and drove to the citadels and drove the streets that Annette would have been taken down after she was arrested. And then we walked around, you know, we were doing field work and writing about shadows and, you know, what streets they would have gone down and what the streets looked like, and just imagined that whole route. And we did the same thing for Les Tourelles, et cetera, you know.
Which is the prison where she was held.
Right, right.
So maybe that also lends itself, I mean, it's field work, but it also brings you right back into the immediacy of the moment, which feels novelistic.
You know, their love was sort of a forbidden love, right? And even before the Nazis came, right? I mean, obviously his family, as you mentioned, devout Catholics, anti-Semites, her family Jewish. On both sides, there must have been resistance even to this, even if their family was not as concerned religiously. That's what creates that tremendous tension from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about the Café Society they were immersed in.
Yeah, they were frequent visitors to the Café de Flore. It's in... the Latin Quarter, it's very, very famous. It still is famous. And the Café de Flore, on any given day, you could find Giacometti, the sculptor, Picasso, the two doyens of the place, Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir, and then a whole clutch of these young wannabe art stars like Annette, like Jean, like their friend Jean Rouche, who went on to become a celebrated documentary filmmaker after the war. Claude Crotel was another of that sort of golden generation. He was in love with Annette before Jean was, and he went on to fight for the resistance, changed his name to Claude Lorsay, became a very successful television producer after the war. So there were many, many, and a wonderful woman called Sonia Mosset.
Well, she died. But then you also have Simon Signoret, who was a very famous actor.
Yes, of course. right, French but, actress.
Yeah, I mean.
I think you guys mentioned Django Reinhardt, the great jazz guitarist, and so on. You know, just.
Yeah. I mean, this is the best part of this, the most fun part of the book, is imagining what the floor was like. And you know, one of the memoirs we used was Simone Signoret, because she writes just wonderfully in the first chapters about, she was Annette's age, and we know they were just a table away from each other without knowing who each other were, because they were nobodies at that point.
Right.
Just fabulous. And you just sort of, you know, wish you were a fly on the wall, or whether it was a time machine to take us back there.
So today's cafe floor is very expensive and sort of chichi. It wasn't then. It was known as an intellectual cafe and an anti-German cafe. Simone de Beauvoir said, no German dares show his face in here. But De Margot, also very expensive nearby, that was frequented by the Germans. But though it's very fancy today, I mean, it was very elegant then, but the real reason they all went there was because of the huge coal stove in the middle of the cafe.
Because it kept them warm in the winter.
Well, they could keep warm because they were terrible winter poor. Those 2 years, yeah. 40 and 41.
Well, and also, you know, you could... sit there with one cup of coffee, and you could nurse the coffee for hours, and they wouldn't throw you out. And, you know, as Simon and I remember when we were younger, the cafes that allowed you to sit there for hours, those are the ones that you went to when you're a young, starving artist.
And the patron, Claude Boubal, was well known as an anti-Nazi, and in fact, he helped several people who were kind of being about to be arrested on the street, and ran into the cafe and smuggled them out of the back and hid them.
I want to thank Heather McAdam and Simon Worrell for a great visit here on Two Jewish. The book is called Star-Crossed, A True Romeo and Juliet Story in Hitler's Paris. It is an immersion in Paris, and it's an incredible story. Where can people go to find out more about you and to find out more about the book?
Well, we both have websites. I'm at heatherdune.com. Very easy to find. And Simon, you're at SimonWorrellAuthor.com, right?
Yeah, and it's a pre-order at the moment on Amazon.
Everybody should read it. It's a great book. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi
Cohen. Thank you.
Our pleasure. When you come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Michelle Cameron, author of Babylon, a novel of Jewish captivity. Really interesting new book. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for service at Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too. 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan, and available on our Facebook page. Especially join us for High Holy Days services at Beit Simcha, 12111 North Lachoya Road for Rosh Hashanah. It begins Friday night, September 15th, Saturday, September 16th, and Yom Kippur, Sunday night, September 24th, and Monday, September 25th, with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan, and our wonderful Beit Simcha musicians. To play us out this morning, here's the Maccabees, a nearly classic parody song by now, The Book of a Good Life for Rosh Hashanah, coming up soon. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.